Hello, amazing women of strength. Can you believe that we have already made it midway through the year? I have been pretty hot this summer, and I can only imagine what you guys are feeling being pregnant in this heat. I have been using hydration support by Needed to stay hydrated. It tastes amazing, and it has electrolytes and trace minerals to support me while I'm out and about with the kids during these hot summer days. I want to urge all of you, beautiful women of strength, to make sure that you are getting quality water intake and hydration. I suggest checking out Needed's hydration support. It is my favorite way to hit my hydration goals and feel my best. Enjoy 20% off with code VBAC20 at thisisneeded.com. Again, that is at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20 for 20% off.
Hello, women of strength. We have a 2VBA2C story for you today. We were just talking about it right before we started recording about all the acronyms. And I was like, oh, you're a VBAC after 2 C-section. She's like, actually, I've done that 2 times. And your baby's 8? Wait, did I see that right? 8 months?
He's 9 months now.
9 months now. Yeah, okay.
Fourth, I'm like, he's almost a year.
Oh my gosh. 10 months,
somewhere around there.
Still very little, still very fresh. So I'm excited for you to share his story and your other baby's story. And we have our friend Emily, by the way. This is Emily. Hello, Emily.
Hi.
And remind me, are you in, where are you located?
I'm in Texas.
Texas. Okay, you're in Texas. Awesome. Okay, you guys, we're going to share her stories. We do have a review of the week, so I want to hurry and get into that. And then we'll jump into Emily's stories. This review is from Rachel, and it says, thanks for giving me the confidence to have a VBAC. I am glad I found this amazing podcast when I was newly pregnant with baby number 2. After a long and traumatic first birth experience that ended in a C-section, I was cautiously hopeful that I would have a VBAC. Using information that I learned from hearing other people's stories on the VBAC link, I felt confident and prepared for the birth of my son. On October 9th, 2020, so that was like 4 years ago, says I had a beautifully redemptive VBAC and welcomed our boy into the world. Thank you so much for helping me achieve my dream. Woman of strength, that review is for you. You and your stories and your participation in the community and on our Instagram and all the places is seriously what builds this community up and helps these other women of strength find the courage, just like she said, and find the education. I am so excited for you, Rachel. Congrats. And as always, if you have time to leave a review, please do so. It helps other women of strength find the stories.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. I'm taking a short break from today's episode to discuss hydration support and why it's important. Hydration is essential for good health and a healthy pregnancy. Water is one of the best ways to hydrate our bodies, but it can be hard to get enough during pregnancy due to nausea or simply just forgetting. Are you drinking enough? ACOG recommends that pregnant women should drink about 64 to 96 ounces, which is about 2 to 3 liters of water every day. But it's not just about getting enough fluid intake. Your body and baby thrive with proper fluid and electrolyte intake. We often need to support our bodies with additional electrolytes during pregnancy to meet our demands on our bodies, including the increased fluid level. In fact, we tend to lose the most electrolytes during pregnancy and postpartum. This is why I recommend Needed's hydration support for pregnant clients and our own VBAC Link community. I even drink it myself. It is filled with the optimal amount of electrolytes and trace minerals, and it tastes so good. My personal favorite is the lemon flavor, but they offer a convenient variety pack of 3 flavors, which is grapefruit, lemon, and lime. Or if you find one flavor that you love, you could just keep getting that flavor alone. I was able to get our mamas a 20% off discount. Use VBAC20 at checkout at thisisneeded.com for 20% off your order. Again, that is thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20 for 20% off. You could also click the link in the show notes. Back to today's show.
Okay, Miss Emily, let's get into this. So you have 4 babies now.
Yes. My oldest is about to be 7, and my youngest is 8 months or so.
Okay. So you were having your first C-section as I was pregnant with my VBAC after 2 C-section baby.
Yeah, it was then. 2017.
Yeah, when you had him?
When I had her. Yeah, my first, I have 3 girls, and then my youngest is a boy.
Yes. So my VBAC after 2 C-section was in 2016. So just right before. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, I'm going to turn the time over to you.
Sure. So my first pregnancy, I actually found out I was pregnant on my honeymoon when we were in Mexico.
Oh my gosh. So,
yeah. I was like stressed out and, you know, working out a bunch and all this, planning the wedding. And I expected my period to come like while we were there. So I'm like, oh, it's going to be the worst. I have all these white clothes and I'm going to be on the beach and we got my period. And then, you know, it just didn't come. So, you know, it was like right at the start of our honeymoon, I was like, let's take a test. I don't want to be, you know, drinking margaritas for the rest of the week. And then of course I was. So, you know, we came back from the honeymoon with another big announcement. Mm-hmm. But I feel like a lot of people's stories is like, you know, you didn't know any better and you just kind of like showed up at the hospital and you did what the doctor said. And I was like the exact opposite at that point. Mm-hmm. I was reading all the things. I read the Ina May book. I had a midwife at a birth center. And I was going to the chiropractor constantly. I was doing all the things to be, you know, ready to give birth at the birth center without medication and all that. And that's just not how it ended up. I think I was around 36 weeks and she was breech. And so I was going to the chiropractor all the time, trying to get her to turn. I was doing spinning babies. I was doing acupuncture. It was going upside down all the time. I was like finding swimming pools. Could do it.
Yes.
All the things. I did moxibustion, where you like smoke your food.
And your bladder 6. Yeah.
She was still breech. And so my midwife set me up with like the breech guy. People come to him from like all over to do breech vaginal deliveries. Mm-hmm. So I started seeing him. This was when we were living in Houston. So I started seeing him and, you know, we did all the things to try and get her to turn and ended up having a version. So I went in, I had an epidural. They manually turned her. And then afterwards, they were kind of like monitoring me in the room. And the nurses were like, okay, well, do you want to be induced now? And I was like, nope, I've got a wife, I've got a plan, I'm going home. So I left the hospital after that. She stayed head down. And then I went to like 42 weeks. And at about 42 weeks, I went into labor. But my labor was weird. So I was getting contractions, but they were like, there was no break between them. It was kind of just like constant squeezing pressure. I was like texting my midwife asking, like, I don't know what to do. I can't time them. There's no like in between. And it was mostly in my back. And after, you know, I think it was like 3 hours and I was like, I can't do this. It's too weird. Like I didn't have, you know, any kind of guidance for what to do if you're not able to like, they weren't broken up at all.
Were you dehydrated at all?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'm not sure. We finally went into the birthing center, and it kind of stayed that way for a really long time. We were there throughout the night. I was like on a, like a birthing ball, and my husband was just like elbow into my back for hours. I couldn't sleep because it was just like constant pain.
Yeah.
We tried like the Rebozo scarf. Like we did all kinds of things while I was there. I will say though, should have had a doula because my midwife kind of just left the room and was gone. She was like somewhere in the center, maybe probably sleeping. I don't know. But she would kind of come in every once in a while. And we were just really like left to our own devices in there. And we had done, I think it was like a 6-week class. We went in like every week, you know, trying to like prepare. Learn.
Yeah.
And yeah. So then we're just, you know, we're just in this room together in the middle of the night, really tired, in a lot of pain, like not knowing what to do to like get this going. She, at one point I was on an IV. She had like given me all the like pain kind of stuff that they can give you. She, at one point she was like, I've done all my, I wish I could.
I've exhausted all my tools, like, type thing.
I've given you as many doses like as I can give you in a time period. And we did the balloon catheter.
Fully.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That came out at some point. I think it was Monday when I went in there, and then Wednesday when I ended up leaving there. And at one point she was checking to see, you know, she was looking at my cervix and my water broke and there's a bunch of meconium and it was like green, crazy. And she just kind of looked at me and was like, I think, you know, it's probably time for you to go. So got back in the car in rush hour traffic in Houston and headed to the hospital. There's a nurse in the back seat with me holding my IV bag. And my husband drove us there. And she had called the doctor that did my version. So I had already met him and known him and known that he was, you know, he was pretty progressive as well, doing, you know, breech vaginal deliveries. And I know he did like breech twin deliveries. Like he was a very cool guy. So I felt good about that. We went, he was like, all right, let's do an epidural. You can sleep, you can relax, all these things. So that's what we did. And then I think I had the epidural for like 8 hours and I was at 6 centimeters and they were like, okay, what about Pitocin? You know, I feel like they did give me, you know, a lot of time. And I hate the saying like give me, but they gave me a lot of time. And by the end of it, I was just like, I was exhausted and I was done and ready to get her out. And I only made it to like 6 centimeters after all of that. Mm. It was 3 days of labor. So by that time, like just get her out of there. She was almost 10 pounds.
Okay.
Yeah, she's big. And yeah, the C-section, that all went fine. I found recovery to be especially hard. My body was already like so tired.
Exhausted.
Mm-hmm. Exhausted. I wasn't prepared for it. You know, I didn't expect it to be as painful as it was. But yeah, I know some people kind of just like pop right up after and are moving around. That was not my experience. So that was my first. I feel like I had like 10 experiences in one. I did the midwife birth center thing. They tried to get my labor going with an epidural. I had already been there for an epidural once. So by the time I was getting the second one, it was kind of like, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the C-section also, all in that one pregnancy. Yeah. I had like had so many, I felt like it was like 3 births in one there. But yeah, then we got pregnant with my second. I talked to the midwife again. She was like, I don't do VBACs. So The first person I called was, you know, the guy who did my C-section and my version. And I said, you know, I want to do a VBAC. And he was like, all right. Like, he was very cool about it. Awesome. Another really easy pregnancy. Got to the end. I was like 41 weeks.
So you carry longer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was 41 weeks with her. And I went in for an appointment and they did a sonogram. And I was like, please, can you check my cervix? Like, I just have to know where
what's
I'm at.
What's going on?
Yeah. I hadn't dilated at all. And he was like, well, your sonogram's estimating she's going to be like 10 pounds also. And my mom had been in town at that point. They're trying to be there for the birth and helping me with my toddler. And she had to leave like the next day because my sister was being induced in Dallas. And so she had been staying with me for that whole like last 2 weeks. And it was kind of like a now or never, like she's going to be gone. I'm already 41 weeks. I was also teaching. And so every day I was walking into work and so pregnant and 1,000 comments like, you're here? You're still pregnant? And it just felt like I was just sick of it, you know? And then hearing the 10 pounds, I was like, all right, like, let's just have a C-section, I guess. And I feel, you know, he kind of left that up to me. I feel like he would have, you know, if I said, you know, he wasn't even doing like a cervix check at that point. Like it was me who had asked for it. He kind of left it up to me and he kind of agreed when I said, okay, like, I guess we'll just, you know, do a C-section. That one was different because it was scheduled. So we, you know, we went in the next morning, easy breezy, a little bit better recovery since I, you know, wasn't already so exhausted at that point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had a newborn and a toddler in a C-section. And again, I mean, it was rough. It kept opening because I was picking up my toddler. Yeah, I was teaching. I went back to work, I think, when my second was like 6 weeks old. Mm. Yeah, it was a lot. So that was my first two C-sections. Wow. Very different experiences for both of them. Same doctor. And then COVID happened and I finished the school year teaching online when COVID happened and my husband was working in oil and gas and we decided we were going to move to my parents' ranch. And I finished the school year online from there and he was working with my dad. My dad does custom home building. So that was kind of something he wanted to get into. So it was kind of like the perfect segue out of there.
So where were your first two babies born?
Houston.
In Houston. And for people who are interested in Breach, are you willing to share that provider's name?
Yes. His name is Dr. Alfredo Jay, G-E-I.
G-E-I. Okay.
Yeah. He was great. I don't know if he's still working or not down there, but he was awesome. Very, very cool guy, very calm, very respectful, friendly, all the things.
Yeah. Yes, good.
Yeah, so we moved up to my parents' ranch in Glen Rose, Texas, and I finished the school year, you know, online. I decided to stay home with my two kids, and I think by the end of that summer, we were ready to, you know, have our third. And I was, you know, it was kind of perfect timing. I was staying home. We have my parents there. My husband had, you know, an easier work, I guess, obligation with working with my dad and all of that. So got pregnant with my third. And that pregnancy was wild. We had a lot going on. I guess it was my first experience having a pregnancy that didn't go, you know, like super smoothly and, you know, whatever test and all the normal things you do, like blood testing, if you choose to do that, everything came back like weird. And so I'd have to go in and retest. And, you know, I think at one point in the beginning, they thought she might have Down syndrome. And so it was kind of like, well, you can do the amnio, you know, to find out, or you can wait until the anatomy scan. And so I spent that time like just kind of waiting until around 20 weeks to find out if she had Down syndrome or not. And I tried to do the gender test like one of those home ones.
Yeah.
My first two were a surprise. And with her, I was like, I just want to know, like, I just need something. Like, I want to know what's going on in there.
Yeah.
So we did one of those gender tests and it came back inconclusive.
Oh, shoot.
Whatever kind of like could go wrong was going wrong with the pregnancy. And I had found an OBGYN that was VBAC friendly who worked with a group of midwives. So it was like him and just a bunch of midwives.
Yeah.
So I had started seeing him and them because I thought, you know, oh, I didn't even mention. So when I had my second baby, you know, they predicted her to be 10 pounds. She was 7 pounds. Seven. And
stop it.
Made me so mad.
Okay, so now I have a question for you. Would you have, because we talk about third trimester ultrasounds, right? Which at 41 weeks is normal because they do like non-stress tests and all those things.
Yeah.
But would you have chose a different situation or would this scenario still have kind of been the same because of your mom and convenience of that?
That's a good question. I would like to say that I would have at least given myself a couple of more days at that point. Like just a couple more days to see if, you know, maybe I always think like, what if I had gone into labor, you know, like in that next couple of days instead of going and getting a C-section, would she have, you know, come out a lot easier being 7 pounds and not almost 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Of course, I thought like, maybe it's my pelvis and maybe this and that and just big baby, small pelvis, like all these things. So I don't know. It's hard to say. Yeah. I was really ready to have her.
Absolutely. And you were given an opportunity too. Like, yeah. I think that's, that kind of goes to speak of like where we are in our pregnancy. Like it's a vulnerable state. It's a very vulnerable state. Yeah. But you had her, you had a better, you know, an okay C-section and your mom was there and there are all sorts of things. So.
Yeah. I really, it's like, she came out and then they, you know, brought me back to the room and my mom was there and she got to meet the baby and then she all the way back up to Dallas and my sister had hers. So they're like a day apart.
Oh, that's so fun.
But anyways, with my third, I was seeing him and, you know, I had some like weird blood testing results and just, you know, weird stuff happening at the beginning. It was still sort of, it was like the end of COVID sort of. So it was like that it happened sort of, COVID started around like spring break. I got pregnant that summer and then, you know, by the next spring, you know, it'd been quite a while, but hospitals and stuff still had, you know, all those weird rules in place about like people being in the room and all the things. It was the tail end of that, but still. So my husband got to come in for the anatomy scan. He was there with me in the room when she did all the scanning and everything. And then he had to leave when the doctor came in. So he went and waited outside in the car and the doctor came in and like my first question obviously was like, did you see any like Down syndrome markers, all these things? And they said, no, they didn't see that. But her head circumference and her cerebellum were measuring in the first percentile. So, you know, normal range is like 1 to 100. And she was right there on, you know, on the cusp of being like abnormally small. So he dropped that bomb on me while I was in there by myself, waited till my husband had left, told me that I was going to need to go and see maternal fetal medicine specialist. And then, you know, I can come back or whatever after that. And so I left that appointment just in shambles, not, you know, not knowing what was going on or what to expect or what that meant. And then I had to wait for an appointment to see a maternal fetal medicine specialist. And at that point, I kind of like just threw the whole VBAC idea out the window. It was all about, you know, like what's going on with the baby and stay healthy and all those things. My mom's a NICU nurse. So I was like, well, I'm going to give birth at the hospital that she works with. Because if, you know, if my baby goes into the NICU, I want her to be there. And all these women that I'd known her working with for like 30 years. So I kind of went to see a maternal fetal medicine specialist and I switched providers and hospitals and was going to, you know, where my mom was working. And I went in and they measured her cerebellum for the rest of my pregnancy. So it was like every other week, every week or so, I'd go in and they measured, and she stayed on that like very tail end the entire time. So I want to say like she might have reached like the sixth percentile by the end in growth. So it's still, you know, pretty precarious, not, you know, not really knowing what the deal was there. But by all accounts, she was healthy. They weren't giving me, you know, any kind of like diagnosis or suspicions about anything. She kept falling in the normal range, which meant they weren't going to do any like further testing. I think they could have done an MRI or something on my stomach at that point, but didn't do any of that. And I think around 34 weeks, I had an appointment, and I was just like, you know, if we're good, you know, to have a VBAC, I still want to do that. And I just looked at my provider and I was like, you know, this was my plan. I don't see why it can't still be my plan. I've got two toddlers at home. I really can't have another surgery. I don't want to do that. And she was okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So
awesome.
Yeah, I was expecting a fight.
You're like, wait, aren't you gonna fight? Yeah. You're like, dude, you really, really do. You expect this like no or but or right. Well, you know, I feel like those are like the things that you just kind of automatically assume. So when you have a provider that's like, okay, cool, you're like, wait, what? Like it like throws you off.
Yeah, I left there with a skip in my step.
I bet you did.
And right after that, I contacted a friend of mine who's a doula, and I started, you know, working with her, and, you know, she was sharing, you know, she shared your podcast with me. And so I was listening to, you know, as many episodes as I could in those couple weeks. And it was very helpful. I'm not a confrontational person or even like a person who, you know, previously I was good at advocating. So I was mostly listening. I feel like I already knew what the hospital situation looked like. I already knew what, you know, what a C-section looked like. So I was really listening for like, how do these conversations happen with doctors? And what does that look like when you're advocating for yourself? And what are the words that I need to use? And I listened for a lot of those kind of examples of like, this is what I can say if she says this. Mm. This is, you know, what I can come back with or suggest if this happens. So that was very helpful for me to just like go in and, well, what about, you know, can we do a Foley? Can we do a Cook's? Yeah. You know,
to feel prepared to have that conversation.
Yeah. So I know at one point they wanted to schedule an induction. And I said, well, what if I just don't come? And she was like, well, we can't drive to your house and bring you, kind of, you know, response. Mm-hmm. Well, what if I don't want to do, you know, Pitocin and all this? Can you do a Foley or a Cook's? And so I really came into those appointments with just like, it felt more of like a two-sided conversation and not just, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. I remember at one point I got there at like my 36 week appointment, and the nurse was like, all right, go in there and get undressed, blah, blah, blah. And I just went in there and I didn't get undressed. I just sat there with all my clothes, and she came back in and she was like, I was like, oh, I don't want that. I don't want my cervix checked. Like,
good job.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't know what to do with that. And she was like, okay, well, I think she's going to want to look. And I was like, well, why?
Well, I don't want it.
I don't want to know. It's going to, you know, it's going to get me in my head. And what's going to change if I'm 36 weeks, you know? And obviously that was the norm there to start doing that at that point. And what happens if I'm 1 centimeter? What happens if I'm 3? I'm still going to go home.
Yeah.
8. So I remember, you know, that was kind of the first time I, you know, did something out of the norm there. And I didn't even say the whole doula thing. Since it was the end of COVID, they were still working out like who was allowed in this event. So it was kind of like I asked for a doula and they didn't know if they could even have them. And so we were asking the hospital like for hospital policies and calling up there, asking all kinds of questions. So by the time we did show up, everybody there was like, she's here. She's here. And my mom worked there too. So it felt a little bit like maybe everyone else was kind of walking on eggshells with me.
Oh, because of your mom too?
Well, my mom too. And she was working that day. So I probably couldn't have had her if she had come in like as an extra person with us. Mm. But she was working. And so she just like showed up in our room in her, her scrubs and everything. I went into labor.
What gestation on this one?
I was 37 weeks.
Whoa. So it way earlier.
Yes. Way earlier. It was Easter. I started having contractions during the whole Easter thing, like hiding eggs, struggling around the yard. And I went to bed that night thinking like this, you know, this feels like it's it. They were not painful, but they were stronger than the regular Braxton Hicks. And so I went to bed and I think at like 3 or so in the morning, they started waking me up and kind of tried to keep sleeping until about 6 in the morning. And I woke my husband up and I was like, you've got to get the kids like figured out into school and stuff. Like we're going to be going into the hospital. It was about an hour drive. So I got in the bath. My doula told me to get in the bath and she gave me some different positions and stuff to do. So I did all of that and that sped things along a whole lot. I did some curb walking and then, yeah, I showed up at the hospital ready to have her. And I want to say I was in labor there for 3 or 4 hours. Mm. I asked to speak to the, is it the anesthesiologist who does the epidurals and stuff?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I talked with her. I told her I like wanted a walking epidural. I don't, you know, a lot of people don't know that they can, there's like a range, you know, you can have it on full blast or you can, you know, just have a little bit. And so she did like a very light epidural and I was able to still move in the bed and get in different positions. They had the bar over the bed at one point and they wanted to do an internal monitor at some point because my heartbeat and the baby's heartbeat, like they just could not figure out like where to put the strap around my stomach. And, you know, I declined that. The nurse really just had to stand there with it pressed to my stomach for hours. But that's what we did. I moved around. There was a peanut ball at some point. And then, yeah, they checked my cervix and my water broke. I don't know if that was on purpose or not, but I had another water break at a cervix check and things went pretty quickly after that. I think I pushed through like 3 contractions.
Wow.
Right before I started pushing, my OB came in and said she was leaving and that another doctor would be coming in. Oh. And I was like, does he know? Like, is he cool?
Yeah.
Confused. But he came in and he was great. He asked if I wanted a mirror. He did like, I know that he was kind of like using like oil and he had like a hot compress and whatever.
Oh, that's
awesome.
He
let me pull her out. So like I reached down and I grabbed her. It was all very cool. We were blasting Enya, Sail Away. It was a whole vibe.
I love that. Oh my gosh. I can picture it all.
It was very easy. The labor, I mean, hardest pregnancy, easiest labor and birth. Yeah, she came out.
No
I wouldn't
problem.
Say she slid out, but, you know, pushing wasn't hard and I could see what was happening. And I don't know, I felt very comfortable.
Good.
Felt ready.
Good. And at the end, was anything going on with her?
Yes. So that's another whole long story. She didn't pass her newborn hearing screening. So, and they do the hearing test. It's like a couple days after you have the baby. She didn't pass, and they kind of thought, oh, she might have, you know, fluid in her ears and this and that. You'll have to go back and do it again after a week or so. So we did it again, and she didn't pass again. So then we had to go to the children's hospital, and they did, you know, another type of hearing test, and we found out that she was deaf. And yeah, we went down the whole like hearing aids route and all of that. And health-wise, besides her hearing, she was having a really hard time holding her head up. So I think we started having a PT come when she was like 4 weeks, because her head was just flopping all over. She had, I guess she was diagnosed with a gross motor delay. And so we did PT until she started walking at like 2.5. And we weren't, you know, we had the option of doing genetic testing and all of that to find out like the reason for the hearing loss. And we just kind of thought, well,
what's it going to change?
You know, yeah. She's still not going to be hearing after all these tests. So, you know, whatever, we'll just deal with, you know, what we've got going on right now. So she got hearing aids at like 4 months, and we were going in and they would do all kinds of tests and stuff. And she really still wasn't responding to any sound. And so they wanted to do cochlear implants. And in order to do that, you have to have an MRI, and they look at everything like structurally to make sure that you're, you know, a good candidate for cochlear implants. They look at the nerve and the ear canal and all of those things. So they came back and they said, you know, she can get them. She's a good candidate for that. But here's all what we saw with her brain on the MRI. So she had white matter abnormalities, which are just when they go in and they look, if you have like all these, you know, white spots, they kind of indicate inactivity. So she had a bunch of that they couldn't explain. And she had a cyst somewhere in there on some groove. I've forgotten all the lingo at this point, but they wanted to find out what the cause of all of those things were. And they also didn't want to give her cochlear implants if they thought that these areas were going to grow. And so then we started doing all of the genetic and DNA testing. They wanted us to wait a year to do her next MRI and then cochlear implants to make sure in that year time period they didn't grow at all. And we are just like, we can't do that. We can't wait a year to find out if like our child has this thing that's taking over the brain, you know. And two, it's a critical time for learning language and speech and all of those things. And we settled with 6 months. So we waited another 6 months. We did another MRI, and then they checked, nothing grew. She was still like making growths and, you know, learned to crawl and all those things. She just did everything about a year behind. So yeah, we did cochlear implants, and we all learned sign language, and that's how we communicate. Awesome. And it's been 3 years now, and she just started the deaf preschool last week.
Awesome.
So I'm home with baby number 4.
Now baby number 4. So who's 9 months old?
Yes. Yeah, he was a surprise. We had a lot going on with her, my third daughter. So I've got Eloise, who's 7, Violet, who is 5, and Matilda, who is just turned 3. And so we kind of thought maybe we'll have another, like, let's see what's going on with her. Let's get her into kindergarten. Let's get her, you know, speaking or signing and all these things. And then we had surprise baby number 4. He ended up being a boy. So that kind of was like, well, that's fun, you know?
Yeah.
So he was born in July of last year.
Okay.
And during all of that, our insurance had changed, so I couldn't go back to the same OBGYN, and I went to another one at that same hospital. And after I had my third, my hormones were just so wild and crazy, and I had a lot of anxiety and obviously stress mm-hmm. from all that was going on with her. And I went in and I was like, I want to figure out like what's going on with my hormones. And I remember the doctor asked me about my previous pregnancies and births and stuff. And I told her I had a VBAC with, you know, Dr. So-and-so at this hospital. And she was like, oh, well, if you want to do that again, you got to go somewhere else because we don't do that here. Like, blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
I did do it here.
Yeah. And I was like, well, don't worry about it because I don't want to have another one. And then, of course, like a few months after that, I ended up getting pregnant again. So our insurance had changed yet again. You know, if you have a baby that has special needs, you've got to get the insurance thing figured out at all times. So we changed again. I was able to go back to the same doctor. So when I was pregnant with him, I saw her and she was like, I'm guessing you're going to want another VBAC. And I said, you're right. And we same thing. I didn't let them check my cervix. I didn't have a late term sonogram. Went into labor with him. I got induced. That's right. I got induced with him.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I was 41 weeks again.
Okay.
I was so expecting another like early one. Like,
yeah.
And yeah, I got to 41 weeks and we started talking about inductions and stuff. And I said, I want, you know, if I come in and do this, I'm going to want to do, you know, Foley or something again. So that's what we did. And that put me into labor like right away. I think I was 1 centimeter. So they were able to put that in and it just went from there. I will say this about the fourth with the same provider. I specifically in my birth plan said no students. I feel like I had already done all of that. I'd already allowed all of them, you know, I had paid my dues to society by, you know, by letting them in. I had a student who did my epidural with my second. Mm-hmm. Like, I was done. I was done with that. I didn't want a bunch of people in the room. Well, when it was time to put in the Foley, she wasn't available. And so they're like, well, do you mind I think it was a resident does it? And I'm like, oh, that's fine, you know. And then the question was raised about breaking my water. And I think I was over 6 centimeters at that point when they were asking about breaking my water. And I was like, you know, talked to my doula. She was there again. I talked to her about it. And we decided that that was okay to get things kind of moving along. And they said, oh, well, she's not available still. Can a resident come in and do that? And I was like, oh, okay, you know. And then it was time to push and deliver. And I mean, a whole team of people came in and I was in the thick of it. I had another like really low dose epidural. So I was still, you know, feeling a lot. And I also think like one thing about the low dose epidural, managing pain and staying on top of pain is a real thing. And you can reach a certain point where there's not much you can do about it, where you're too far. And I think that's kind of where I got with that is, you know, even though I had the epidural, I was too far along at the point for it to do much. And I could turn it up. And it wasn't making any difference. So just know that's something that does happen. So when it was time to push, my doctor just on her wheelie stool just scooted out of the way and someone else showed up.
What? Again?
from the background. And it was like, push, push, push. I mean, the vibes were very different. And I'm not sure why that happened. Because as far as I'm concerned, nothing was happening with me medically and nothing was happening with him medically to like necessitate me needing to like push
harder and be dramatic.
I had not been pushing for hours. It was like I got him out in under 30 minutes. And it felt like there was just this like need for me to like get him out of there and get him out quickly, which I'm not sure why that happened. And so I guess it was a resident who was down there. There was no oil this time. There was no hot compress this time. There was more pulling during the pushing part. And I ended up tearing like fourth degree all the way. No. It was awful. So same provider, different experience. She's retired now. I would say that I wouldn't go as far as to say I'd recommend her to other people having a VBAC. I think she was more like, what's the word? Not VBAC,
tolerant.
And I kind of feel like she didn't think I was going to get there. So she said yes, thinking that like, that's not how it was going to go. And we'd never get to that point where I was like in labor, they are ready to push, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what happened both times. So it was kind of thrust upon her also. And I wouldn't say, you know, she's not a bad doctor or anything. It just, that's my one takeaway from that one is, you know, you're pushing and there's a lot of people in the room and there's a lot going on and you're very much like focused. And I wish that I or someone else in the room had said like, oh, wait, what's happening down there? You know, why is this person, you know, shooting in and why are we doing this so quickly? And
yeah,
what's this need to like
the rush
push? Yeah, that's my takeaway from that one is, you know, at the end of the day, I had an easy pregnancy and an easy delivery. And, you know, I did have another vaginal, but it also came with some bad as well. It was a bad recovery for me for sure.
You know, and I think that's something to note. And, you know, not every, like you said, you got your vaginal birth and everything, but not every vaginal birth always ends with an easy recovery or an easy experience or even a positive experience. And so, you know, it does help to have that support team, but here you go. You like still even then, like last second, like got switched out on, which you did last time, the second time or the third time too. But like, that's kind of weird. I'm like, was she not confident in delivering babies or what?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. And of course, afterwards, I'm like, oh, you know, if she had stayed sitting there, would I have torn as much?
Exactly.
If I wasn't like pressured to go so quickly, would I have torn as much? So, you know, I left that one feeling like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And I talked to my doula afterwards about it. And she was like, you know, I wish that like I had said something, but unless we had talked about it before, you know, it's like for her to stop a doctor in the middle of what they're doing without me having already told her, hey, I don't want this, you know, it's that weird, like,
it's a really tricky situation.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
As a doula, I will say it's very tricky when you're like, I don't like what I'm seeing, but she's not saying anything and didn't say anything to me before this. I would assume she doesn't like this, but at the same time, it's like, like you said, it's kind of tricky. You don't want to step on people's toes. You don't want to like change the atmosphere, which doesn't sound like the atmosphere was exactly peaceful either. But yeah, gosh, that's hard.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was another, you know, unexpected, like I hadn't prepared for that scenario. I had it in my birth plan that I didn't want students, but then I had said yes to them for these things. So like, I can see how we got there, but yeah.
Yeah.
For those wondering, I pushed him out to Shania Twain's Man, I Feel Like a Woman.
Okay.
So there were some good vibes in there.
I'm loving all your music choices. This is amazing. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm sorry that it was that type of an ending. I am happy for you that you were able to have both of your, you know, your third and your fourth vaginal, but it's such a good takeaway and just a great note, like women of strength, think about those things too, even pushing like what you're wanting and talk about this to your team and be like, if nothing's wrong, if there's no emergent, like I need it to be this way. Cause that's tricky. That's for sure tricky. I wanted to kind of talk about way back into the first birth. Mm-hmm. I wanted to just give a couple suggestions for people who are kind of having similar, I call it a hyperactive uterus, where the uterus is just too active. It's not releasing, right? And sometimes that can be a baby's position, kind of working through and trying to get into the right position. And the uterus is like trying to help. But a lot of times it can be due to things like dehydration Or I know that sometimes if there's like a UTI, like an infection or something like that, that can kind of cause a hyperactive. And then sometimes some people just have hyperactive uteruses, but with a uterus that's constantly like just not letting go like yours, something that a midwife a long time ago within my doula career suggested to a client of mine was called cramp. I think it's called cramp bark. Cramp bark, yeah. And it's a tincture and you can take it and it can try to help relax the uterus. So if you're having like prodromal labor, really long prodromal labor, or like Emily, where her uterus just wouldn't give up and it was just like constant. And you said it was in your back, which made me think maybe
I didn't have that like wraparound like experience. It was like, I'm in a whole lot of pain, but it's like right here in my back and it just it never eased up. No. And then I also like, I wasn't dilating at the same time after all this time of being like that. I think it was definitely her positioning. She was sunny side up by the time, you know, the C-section did happen. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking. That's what I was like, were you dehydrated or maybe a positional thing, right? So that can, a positional factor can, and sometimes the uterus needs to kind of relax so we can like work with position. And I know you were working with position, but your uterus wasn't giving up. So sometimes you can do like just, increase your hydration, but cramp bark. And always, always, always ask your provider about it. But it was just something that a midwife, and I actually think Julie took it with one of her babies with her prodromal labor too, but, and it helped her as well. So I just wanted to kind of like bring back that note of, if you're having that hyperactive uterus, there could be a few things like hydration, position, maybe like an infection that's undetected. Or sometimes you just got a great uterus that likes to just keep squeezing. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your beautiful stories. I'm so happy for you and congratulations.
Thank you for having me.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.